Okay. Okay, so then, we just did five yesterday? Yeah, exaggeration. So then, six. It is offensive to consider the holy name of the Lord imaginary. That one thinks that this is just something to concentrate on. That there is just one has to fix one's mind somewhere to make it peaceful and to train it. So therefore, we give the holy name, and then like this, you concentrate on this, and then with time, then that's given up. You know, just like you have the worship of Vishnu, who is in the mode of goodness, the Panchopasana. You worship the sun, then who's there? Sun, Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, and Vishnu. And that, you know, this is all just representations of the Brahman in the various modes and situations. So Vishnu is the representation of the mode of goodness. So it's imaginary, just like the material world is imaginary. And then when you perfect your chanting and perfect your sadhana, then all this will just disappear, and then you will know that you are, you know, you are God. So, not like that. One has to understand that the name and the Lord are non-different. That the Lord exists, therefore His name exists. That is very essential to understand. That the name, the Lord and His name are non-different, and therefore the name is not imaginary. Like that. See, there's nothing, the spiritual world, the Lord is not imaginary. He is real. The spiritual realm is not imaginary. It is real. It's coming from Krishna. Even the material world is not imaginary. It's real. What is imaginary is that we think there is something here for us to enjoy. That's what is imagination. The real imagination is that. We think that there's something to enjoy here in the material world, when factually there's not. There's nothing to enjoy here. That is the real thing. Nothing to enjoy here. So the only figment of our imagination is that we can be happy in the material world. That is the illusion. So then the Mayavadis, then they think, well, the enjoyment here is illusion. They accept that. But they think that's because the material world is illusion. And that myself as an individual is an illusion. Because I as an individual tried to enjoy and control, I couldn't do it. Therefore, that's also illusion. So then all there is Brahman, and I am that Brahman. You know, not that I am a part and parcel and I can go into Brahman. I go into Brahman, I'll still be 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. But they think that when I merge in Brahman, I become Brahman. I expand unlimitedly, and I am like this. So there, in other words, it's just, I could not satisfy my ego as the enjoyer. I could not satisfy my ego as the roller. Now I will try to satisfy my ego to be God. That is their idea. So all these ideas must be given up. We must see that, no, Krishna and his creations are real. But the illusion is that I am the enjoyer of this creation. You know? That is the illusion. So we have to give that up. So therefore, the name is real. So we should not consider that the name is imaginary. Seventh offense, which is, says here, the greatest offense, greatest in the way of, it's the most disgusting, most abominable, most, it's like you have to be very, you know, complete, total lack of character to be able to perform this. That you think that by chanting the holy name, here, as it says here, the greatest offense at the lotus feet of the holy name is to think that since chanting the holy name can counteract all sinful reactions, one may therefore go on sinning and at the same time chant the holy name to neutralize the reactions. One who thinks in this way cannot be purified by any program of sense restraint and severe austerities, nor by the various punishments of Yamaraj. Therefore, it's the most, means the lowest of the low, right? Like that. So it's because no one can be purified because they are taking total advantage of the Lord's mercy upon us to bless us with the chanting, with the opportunity to relieve ourselves of all previous sinful activities so that we can go back to Godhead. And we take advantage of that just to enjoy in the material world. Like that. So we use God. We use the mercy that God's given us to do just the opposite of what God wants. Like that. So this is very, very disgusting. Then Padma Puran continues, Dharma Prata Tyaga Hutari Sarva Subha Kriya Samyam Api Pramadaha Ashradhadhane Vimuke Pi Ashrinvati Yash Chopadesha Shiva Nama Paradaha. 8. It is offensive to consider the chanting of the holy name equal to the performance of ordinary religious ceremonies, or fire sacrifice, the observance of austere vows, or the practice of renunciation, all of which are materialistic auspicious activities. In other words, that you think that if you do some religious ceremony, you perform a sacrifice, observe severe austerities or vows, practice all renunciation, these are all part of karmakanda, right? Karmakanda, jnanakanda. That one thinks that the holy name is equal to this, or these are equal to the chanting of the holy name. So, point is these are simply pious activities which may elevate the living entity to the platform fruitive results or knowledge. So these are, but the holy name is non-different from Krishna, so he can elevate one to the transcendental platform. So there's no question that there's any semblance. Any of these other activities, if they're not performed perfectly, one does not get the benefit. Right? Until you've perfected or finished, just like you're doing a big yajna. Until you finish the yajna, you cannot get the results. Right? After the yajna is finished, after the purnahuti is done, after the shanti done and all this is done and the fire is told he can leave, then the priest bless the yajaman that he may fulfill his desires. Right? Whatever is the desire of the yajaman, may it be fulfilled. Then he gets the benefit. Before that, not. That's the point. Before that, they don't get the benefit. That's why you'll see that, even though it seems strange, but that's why we'll see that in the yajna, you'll do all that, all these activities are done, then they give dakshin to the priest. Then the achidradharana, means anything that's been wrong is cleared. Because the idea is when the yajna finishes, then the yajaman should get their results, right? The sponsor should get the results, right? So the results are gotten when they've given the dakshin to the priests and the priests have given their blessings. Then the result is there. So all these ordinary religious ceremonies, then they can only give one material result and nothing more. And only if it's done perfectly and only at the end. But the holy name, even if the rules and regulations, there are no rules and regulations for chanting, and when one just begins and chants the first name, already he's getting benefit. Already he's getting the results of all these things. Rupa Goswami mentions in Nectar Devotion that it's offensive to kind of make the comparison, but just to give an idea, he says just taking prasadam, then one could kind of give some comparison between 10,000 Ashwamedha yagyas and taking prasadam, right? It only takes 100 Ashwamedha yagyas to become Indra, right? So that means 100, what trouble it takes to do 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, right? Then you get 100 times the benefit of that just by sitting down once and taking prasadam. So there's no comparison between the transcendental activities of chanting the holy name and the devotional process. And these fruitive activities, right? Taking prasadam means the holy name is Krishna, and prasadam is Krishna's remnants, right? So if the remnants of Krishna are so powerful, let alone just one chanting of the holy name, right? Like that. As we mentioned before, the platform of Namabhas, even there, that one gets liberation. It's already even beyond, 10,000 Ashwamedha yagyas. It's beyond that. So one has to be very convinced that the holy name is the best of all possible sacrifices. Right? Krishna says, of sacrifice, he is the chanting of the holy names, japa. Right? So in the bridge of sacrifice, bridging between the material world and the spiritual world, on that, the most important is chanting of the holy name. Okay. Means the yajna is done by chanting mantra. Meditation is done by chanting mantra. Deity worship is done by chanting mantra. Therefore, that's the most important element in all sacrifices, is chanting of mantra. Then we are able to cross that bridge and come to the lotus feet of the Lord. Number 9, it is an offense to preach the glories of the holy name to those unwilling to hear, to atheists, or those to have no faith in chanting the holy name. It means that that these persons, they have no faith. And so they have no faith, therefore, they have no faith, okay. But now, because they know nothing about the Lord and about the name, they can also do very little to commit offense. Being faithless is one thing, being offensive is another. So if you tell the glories to someone who doesn't want to hear, to those who are atheists or those who have no faith, then now they hear some things, and naturally, because they're not devotees, they're going to think it's just another ritualistic activity. Then they're going to think that the holy name is imaginary because they're atheists. Or they're going to think that they're exaggerations. Or you're going to mention where it comes from, they'll blasphemy these various scriptures, the blasphemy the guru who gives it, the preachers who do it. They will consider this name and Shiva's name and Grum all the same. So if you bring up the topic to someone who doesn't want to hear, who's an atheist, who has no faith, then they will commit these offenses. So before they're just faithless. But now if you tell them the glories, then they'll become offensive. So one should be very, very careful to not preach to those who are unwilling to hear. Right? Prabhupada, for them, take prasadam. Generally you'll find everybody likes prasadam. Give them prasadam. So many stories of devotees who, they came to the temple with a friend or just came because they were hungry and they liked the food but didn't like the philosophy. They would speak bad about everything. No faith in anything. But after coming to, so many Sunday feasts, and after a while, then they also joined. It's just by taking prasad they become purified enough they could understand the philosophy. While in the beginning they were so contaminated they couldn't. So to such a person, don't bother with the preaching. You know? You just get them to take prasad and if possible to chant. You know, chant. You don't tell them necessarily have to tell them what's going on. You just chant. This is the Lord's name. Okay, you chant. So there's no offenses. Shudvapi nama mahatmyam ya priti priti rahito dhaman. No, dhamma. Aham mamari paramo namni so pyaparadha krit. If a person has heard the glories of the transcendental holy name of the Lord, but nevertheless continues in the materialistic concept of life, thinking, I am this body, and everything belonging to this body is mine. And if he thus shows no respect or love for the chanting of the holy name, that is an offense. So once one hears about the glories, then one has to follow. See, this is, then would be the final point. If you preach to someone who doesn't want to hear and this and that, then it's a glory, because once you've heard, you have to follow. Right? That is the point. If you don't know, then the reaction is very minimal or it's overlooked. But if you know and don't follow, then the reaction is more. Right? So that is very important. And now that we know the glories, then we should take it seriously. We should have respect for the holy name. We should be endeavoring to perfect our chanting. We may not have the love, but at least we can have the respect for the holy name. And we must be trying to understand that I am not this body. I am servant of Krishna, and everything that belongs to this body also belongs to Krishna. I am Krishna's. Whatever I have belongs to Krishna. Like that. Then things become good. Otherwise, then it's simply a problem. Simply a problem. Yes? No? Okay, are there any questions on anything to do with the Nam Seva? Nam Seva with the, either on the holy names or on the process of, you know, technical process of chanting. Yes?
It often, you know, mentioning how it takes so many would that mean that despite the fact that they are so powerful, they cannot just change their karma life? Or they should have just come down and join this form or something? Is that they cannot do that because of they cannot just make their own devotional process happening like that? Or why is it so difficult for them to?
So the demigods, point being that the demigods, why they can't just come and take advantage of the chanting and all that. Basically, except for Shiva and Narad, Narad is known as the Deva Rishi, you know, and Lord Shiva is the greatest of the Vaishnavas. All the other demigods are materialistic, so they're happy in their position. They're not looking to get out of it. Like in that story with the original Buddha and original Jain, or Jinnah. Then the demons were doing, Sukracharya had got all the demons to, the demons were thinking, why are the demigods so powerful? And then Sukracharya explained, because they do yajna, they do austerities. Yajna, austerities, and they, I think, discuss philosophy, you know, they discuss the scriptures and all this. So then the demons said, well, why don't we do these things? You teach us. So then he taught them, and then they were starting to do, and they were getting very powerful. So then the demigods didn't know what to do, so they went to Lord Brahma. And then Pama, then he said, well, let us go to Vishnu. So they went to the milk ocean, sat down to meditate. And normally what happens is Vishnu then appears in the heart of Brahma and then gives the answers to their problem and says something like this. So they sit on the bank of the milk ocean and chant Purusha Shukta. And then, pleasing the Lord with his Purusha Shukta, then he then reveals himself to Brahma, and in this way then the demigods get their answer to their problem. So this time the Lord appeared personally. He just appeared personally. So all the demigods are very surprised and very pleased also at the same time. So then, before they could speak, then Vishnu says, I know what you've come for, and I'll surely take care of the problem. Don't worry for that. But before I solve this problem, is there anybody here who would like to now just come back to me? You know, leave your positions here in the material world and just come back to me, come back to the spiritual realm and serve there. So then immediately everybody kind of like gets very quiet and shy and, well, we weren't asking for that. We're asking for you to solve our problem here so we can continue to enjoy and our positions and facilities and all that, you know? Because we're your servants and we're serving in this capacity and we're happy, we're fine. So Vishnu mentioned, because the results, you know, will be... So he says, okay, then this is, you know, if anybody wants, then before I give the solution, then, you know, now's your chance. So no, everyone was quiet. So when he saw everyone was quiet, then from out of Vishnu, from, I'm not sure if it's from his body or just like behind him, then out each side, then came the original, the Adi Buddha and the Adi Jinna, or the Adi Jain, who was... Jain was completely naked, and Buddha, you know, was dressed, you know, shaven head, and just wearing, I think, just one cloth, like that. So then they went off, and they walked off in the directions to the demons. You know, the demigods are watching what's going on. So then they went off, and then the Buddha, he went over to those doing the sacrifices and said, what is this, you know? What are you doing? You know, they saw him because he's very effulgent, very attractive. So they were immediately also attracted and, you know, stood up and came over. Who is this personality? So he says, what are you doing, this and that? And so in this way they explained, and then he bewildered their minds and then taught him the Buddhistic philosophy, where they became atheistic. They gave up the Vedas. So because... the yagyas are based on the Vedas, so you have faith in the Vedas, you have to do yagya. So then the demons, and they gave up, that group gave up following the Vedas. So they stopped the yagya. And then Jinna, he went over to those who were doing the austerities and those who were discussing the philosophy and said, you know, what is happening here? Oh, we're discussing the philosophy, we'll come to some understanding. And the others were saying, well, we're doing our austerities, we'll get some power from this and all that. Then he said, well, maybe you'll get, maybe you won't get. How do you know you'll get? You know? Like this, he then brought this point up. In the Jain philosophy, this is called Syad Syad. Maybe, maybe not. You know? Maybe you'll discuss the philosophy, you'll get some knowledge and understanding, maybe you won't. Maybe you'll do the austerity, maybe you'll get benefit, maybe you won't. In other words, threw it completely into speculation. It's not based on that you're heard and you accept the authority like this. So in this way, he bewildered this. So one group he made into Buddhists and one group he made into Jains. So they're considered non-Vedic because they give up the Vedic conclusions. Right? They may still follow some of the aspects of the Vedic culture and how they dress, how they eat, how they interrelate, you know, family values and all this. But in philosophy, they became atheists. Like that. So technically, then they're not proper followers of the Veda. They may follow the Vedic culture, but the culture has to be based on the philosophy. So if you follow Vedic culture without the philosophy, it's sentimentality. Like that. So therefore, and you see, they teach be nice, be good. It's all sub-religious principles. Because religious principles then start with the Varnashram, which means then accepting the Vedic principles. Like that. And then, even that, you have to accept the philosophy. So because they remove that, they accept those principles, but not the philosophy. So you end up with just sentimentality. It's not real philosophy. You know, it's speculation. So, like that. So we can see that from this story that even though the result of the Lord removing the difficulty is going to create problem. Right? In other words, Prahlad Maharaj says, in the material world, the cure for the disease is worse than the disease itself. Right? Like you have a bad stomach. So you go to the toilet a couple of times, that's bad. Okay. But now, to get rid of it, you have to sit down and eat, you know, flat rice with yogurt and salt and nothing else, you know, for 3 days. So that itself is worse than going to the toilet. Like that. You'll see. You just want to put something in it, you know, just something to get some other taste in there, you know, just to... You know, a few French fries, just, you know, a little something, something else in there, some achar, something, because it's so bland, the taste, that, you know, it's like, you know, you find that with kids, they'd rather, you know, die of dysentery than follow the diet, you know. So Prahlad Maharaj says that the cure is worse than the disease. So in here, then the cure for the demons performing all the pious activities is worse than the disease. Now they were performed, they will become atheistic. And then that atheism, because the demons, as time goes, the demons become more and more, right? Especially in the Kali Yuga. Therefore we see everybody is following this nirvisesh shunyavad, right? Nirvisesh means no qualities. Nirvisesha, no qualities. So that is the impersonalism. And shunyavad, then it's all void, like that. So you get your atheists, your Buddhists, like this. All these kind of things then are what we see the acharyas, you know, Srila Prabhupada has come to destroy. Because there's so much of it, right? The West is non-Vedic culture. And we see this totally rampant with this impersonalism and voidism. Even they say they're religious, but you say, well, you know, God's a person, they'll say, yes, does he have quality? He has a form, he can walk around, talk to you, deal with you, eat and all that, and no. Ultimately, he's, you know, impersonal. Big light, this and that. They'll all put the person in the front, but they'll say, well, actually higher than is the impersonal. Like that.
Very, very famous modern Christian philosopher is now basically saying that God is so big that we cannot get far enough to see him.
It's so big. Like really can't get far away enough to see him. Therefore you just see. That's funny. It's so big you can't get far enough away to see it. Yes. This is the ant philosophy. Philosophy of the ant. Anything else? Yes. Where? No. That which is better, Tulsi or Neem, both are fine. You know, as a tradition, generally we prefer Tulsi, but Neem is also quite okay. You know, Neem is good. So many, I mean, thousands of, definitely thousands of the initiation beads that Prabhupada gave to devotees were Neem. The original beads were just, you know, wooden beads that you bought in, you know, in the 88 cent store or something, you know, in America.
Like that. Is it better to use Neem before initiation and then Tulsi after?
That, I mean, that's maybe become a the way devotees do things at Neem before and Tulsi after. Point is before Tulsi wasn't so readily available, devotees weren't coming to India so much and this and that. So then it was easy to get neem beads. You could get sacks of neem beads and in this way deal. But it's, you know, they're both fine. You know? If you have the opportunity to get tulsi, then that's very good. You know? Because the neem means is that Lord Chaitanya is born under a neem tree. So the neem then will remind us of Lord Chaitanya. Right? But it's not like directly Lord Chaitanya or directly one of his associates. While the tulsi is, this is directly one of Krishna's associates. So then we get that association of the pure devotee. So in this way then it's, if one can get, then that's nice. But it's not that if you have neem that there's any problem. Huh? Does that make sense? Yeah, it means it's there, but there's no problem with the neem. Do neem dispel bad influences by its nature? The neem tree, then you'll find ghosts and other personalities like that don't like neem trees because of their purifying effects. That's why in Bengal they always put neem trees in front of their house. You know, front of the house, around the house, because it keeps away bad influences.
As the Prabhupada said that if you put neem tree in front of your house, it keeps away ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, so Srila Prabhupada mentioned, I think some conversation or something like that. So it's very pure. Neem is very pure. The neem oil, the air from the neem trees is very pure. Huh? No, are you still talking about neem? Because otherwise, because it was his question. Oh, next question. Okay, let's go to Mataji. Okay, does mental offenses have effect? In the Kali Yuga, basically one is not held responsible for what he thinks. But the point is that unless one tries to remove offensive thoughts, then the tendency is that from thinking, it goes into feeling, into willing. So then one will commit offense. If you think so much about it, then after a while, then you want to perform those activities. So therefore, is that even though if you think offensively, you don't get the reaction of the offense, but that thought will be an obstacle for your advancement until you remove it. Does that make sense? We understand that? Like that. So they have to be removed. But it's if you see somebody and, you know, you imagine somebody was just adjusting their Elmira in their room and by accident it fell through the window and it came falling down and squashed the person and like that. And, you know, you won't get a reaction for that. But until you remove that kind of thought from the mind, then it will slow down your advancement. Like that. In other words, it'll be an obstacle. It won't be an offense. Okay. That, yeah, one can do that, but also just more chanting. The chanting itself will, one has to become more and more serious, and one has to understand more and more the glories of devotees, how rare it is to get the association, and that everybody may have their conditioning. So that conditioning may be still there, so we should not be overly disturbed by it. That's... Yes.
In success, like I said, Mahaprabhu said, while chanting, we should be humble and state of mind and tolerant like a tree. But it's not so easy to be like this. And so how to achieve this tolerance? And, because it's not so easy with devotees sometimes and be humble and tolerant.
Yeah. Okay, so Lord Chaitanya says one must be humble and tolerant when chanting, but then that's not so easy. So how to develop that? So basically it's a matter of one has to understand that if we are servant, then servant means we're following the order. We are given an order. And the ability to perform those activities is then coming from the Lord and the devotees. Like that. So if we think that we are the doer, we are the body, so therefore we think we are the doer, and things in connection with the body are, you know, ours, then we become intolerant, we become disturbed. That's the point. So therefore, if we can give up that mentality, then we find it's very easy to become humble, because we're humble, we're proud if we think we're doing things. We're humble if we understand we're not doing things. Right? And we're tolerant as if we don't think we're the controller. Right? Like that. Or we don't think that I am the enjoyer. Things in connection with the body. We get intolerant because it's disturbing our body, our senses, like that. Or it's disturbing, we're intolerant because we've told somebody to do something and they don't do it right. So I said, and they should do it because I said. Because I'm special. So we become intolerant. You know? Or we're very proud of our intelligence, someone else can't do it, so they're stupid, and I don't like to associate with stupid people because I'm very intelligent and very special. So it all comes back to that we think we're special because of the false ego. You know, so because of false ego, we think we're the doer, so therefore we're proud, and we think that we're the controller, the enjoyer, so therefore we're intolerant. Does that make some sense? Speak louder.
Some people say Rama and some people say Ram. Is there any preference? Because it's natural, you know, like sometimes you go and check how far it's not, you say Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, and then instead of Hari Rama, Hari Ram.
Means it's just a matter of the pronunciation. It means in Bengali, generally you'll find the Rama is there, but sometimes the A is very short, so you may not hear it so loudly. But in like North, the Hindi, then there's a tendency is they don't say the A's at the end. But generally for the mantra, you would pronounce it. You know, because this is Sanskrit. So Sanskrit, then you would say the A. But like you say in Prabhupada's tape, that in there just maybe it's pronounced very shortly. Like that. But that it doesn't matter. That's not a problem. Yes.
Different initiation spiritual masters in this kind of different standards of chanting again and beats, like you lose your initiation beats. Some devotees they will just take new beats for a disciple and chanting, but others some also say that it is not there. The chanting of the beats, which is important, but the mantra is important. So you got initiated into the Hare Krishna with the mantra, so that's very important. But the beats actually itself is very important. So both for that, I will understand which one is that, what is the origin of
that. I see. Means the whole point of whether, and we discussed this one point, that whether getting the spiritual master chants on our first set of beads. Then after that, if we lose the beads or get some new beads, some will say we chant, they'll chant on it again, and some will say it's not necessary because it's the holy name. It's been given. With the Harinam Diksha, then the holy name has been given. So then, which is correct?
Huh? Can you suggest that
Yeah, so we explained a little, I think, yesterday, is that they're both correct, means that it's not that it's a problem, because the point is that the reason the disciple wants the spiritual master to chant on the beads again is then there's that kind of feeling of that connection, and it's more of a sentimental thing. So if the spiritual master has the time and inclination, he can do that. You know, so it's not wrong. But it's not that when you lost your beads, you lost your right to chant the holy name, and you lost the name, and now Krishna doesn't recognize you anymore. And so until the spiritual master chants on your new beads, then, you know, you're lost, and, you know, and therefore if you can't get to him, then so many days will go by, and like that. No. Prabhupada made, I think some devotees had brought beads to Prabhupada in the same way, and Prabhupada said, just like your Brahman thread, it's chanted on the first time, and after that you just keep changing it, it doesn't matter. It's that potency has been given, it's been empowered. So it's just when you change, that empowerment goes to the next thing, from one thread to the next, from one set of beads to the next. In other words, Krishna is accepting, you know, that we've initiated that seriousness, and so that is there. So it's not that it's necessary that it be done again. But, you know, if the situation is such and the relationship is such, if it's done, it's not a problem. You know, it may be inspiring that when somebody has, you know, 7,000 disciples, then it may be a little bit difficult. You know, you have to be chanting on 20 beads at once every day, 16 rounds, because they're all getting new beads. And anything else? Yes.
I was just wondering, when you take initiation, I know most people, they give new beads. But I was just, my father, when he got initiated, he gave Prabhupada the beads that he was already chanting. Is it necessary to give new beads?
If Prabhupada, generally everybody gives new beads, but here's an example where the devotee gave the beads he was already chanting on the spiritual master, and he chanted on those and gave them back, then that could also be done. You know? But was there any specific reason he gave those beads?
Probably
couldn't get anything else, and so therefore that went, you know, unless those beads had some special significance or something, you know. So most likely it was just no other beads available, and so that's the way.
69, so it's quite a long time.
Yeah. So, but since that, from what I understand, is every time the new beads would be given. Yeah. I don't know. That might be an interesting question for Hari Keshmaraj, because he dealt so much with that, giving of the names and the beads and all that. Anything else? Yes. Can you speak louder? That's an additional offense. These are the 10 offenses, and then you'll notice it is said it is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. Sometimes the 9th offense is also, instead of being preached to the faithless, it's mentioned as being inattentive, like that. This is the main list, but there's another list that is there. The inattentive comes at that point.
I also heard that offense is like the basic offense. The only other offense is like the last person.
Yeah, could be. I mean, definitely, if one is not attentive, then one won't get such results, so one may have a tendency to continue to do other offenses, you know, and one may then therefore remain attached and not develop full faith and love and all these things. That is there. Same time as by committing these other offenses, then one can lose one's determination and taste and start to become inattentive. So it can go both ways. But generally, yes, if there's inattentiveness while you're chanting, then you won't get such great results. So therefore, these other offenses are going to go away very slowly. So it has to be. They all have to be dealt with very carefully. Yes. Means if you're to sit in front of the deity and chant, but then because there's so many people coming by, then one closes one's eyes. Well, one could either sit farther back, so then all those things don't bother because they become much smaller, you know. Or one can sit much closer than where people don't. One may close the eyes sometimes to concentrate, but the main thing is that you're seeing the Lord and trying to hear the name. And you understand the name is none different from the Lord. Like that. Otherwise, sit more to the side. It's not that you can't close the eyes, but it means you can see the deity, at least, you know, I mean. Anything else? You're smiling. It's connected with the next subject. So you want to ask the questions ahead of time. So that. Oh. Okay, so it's coming. That is coming. You're going to now hear about the glories of Tulsi. So the next section is Tulsi Seva. In the nectar of devotion, we find the following passage glorifying Tulsi Devi. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Tulsi tree, which can immediately vanquish volumes of sinful activities. Simply by seeing or touching this tree, one can become relieved from all distresses and diseases. Simply by offering obeisances to and pouring water on the Tulsi tree, one can become freed from the fear of being sent to the court of Yamaraj, the king of death who punishes the sinful. If someone sows a Tulsi tree somewhere, certainly he becomes devoted to Lord Krishna. And when the Tulsi leaves are offered in devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna, there is the full development of love of Godhead. Skanda Puran, quoted in the Nectar Devotion, Chapter 11. Tulsi is glorified throughout the Puranas and the Pancharatra. It was for the upliftment of the souls in the material world that Lord Vishnu created Tulsi, as the ocean of milk was being churned. Tulsi is more dear to the Lord than Lakshmi, for Tulsi Devi undertook extreme austerities and worshipped the Lord with love in order to have him as her husband, and the Lord fulfilled her wish. There's no better recipient of charity than a vipra, no better gift than cows, no better tirtha than the Ganga, and no better leaf than a Tulsi leaf. Whatever one can obtain by offering the Lord all types of flowers and leaves can be attained by simply offering him one Tulsi leaf. An offering of flowers made of gold, jewels, and pearls is not equal to an offering of Tulsi leaves. By offering the Lord Tulsi leaves, a devotee is released from sins accumulated for 1 koti, 10 million lifetimes. When a devotee offers Tulsi to the Lord's head, all the devotees' unmentionable and undetectable sins are destroyed. By sprinkling the Lord's house with water using a tulsi leaf, one is freed from all great sins. A person who has amlaki fruit or tulsi leaves in his mouth or on his head or body when he dies is guaranteed not to suffer in hell. So we can see that the power of Tulsi Devi, how dear she is to Krishna. Therefore, it's very important that daily we are worshipping Tulsi. Okay. So now your question. We have been overwhelmed by the glories of Tulsi. We have forgotten your question. Well, it's one of the main, how essential is it to have her mercy, is that it says that these five main items are the most essential points of the deity worship, I mean of devotional service, right? So hearing, chanting Hare Krishna, then hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, then worshipping the deity, and living in the holy dham. So, then, under worshipping the deity, then we find worship of Tulsi and honoring of Prasad. So then we can understand that it's very important. Because it's an integral part of this main item of worshipping the deity. So worshipping the deity means including taking the Lord's remnants and worshipping Tulsi. Right? Because the Lord cannot be worshipped without worshipping his energy, right? And it says here that Tulsi is more dear to the Lord than Lakshmi, right? Lakshmi is automatically there. Tulsi went through austerities to get there, right? So therefore, then in the Pancharatik system, you're worshipping the Lord, so Lakshmi Narayan. So then in that means the Lord is there. Lakshmi is there. You know, she resides on his chest. But specifically then worship of of Tulsi must be there because she is so dear to the Lord, even more than Lakshmi. You understand the logic? Means Pancharatrik worship of Vishnu, of Krishna, means Lakshmi Narayan. You know, so the Pancharatrik system means Lakshmi Narayan. So, but Lakshmi, Tulsi is more dear than Lakshmi, right? So therefore, the Lord, then Tulsi, and his remnants, Prasad, right? So these are the items that are there in that main, these are the main principles. Does that make sense? So without worshipping Tulsi, then it'll be a little difficult. That makes sense. And in Vrindavan, she's the one who controls the forest. Vrindavan. Vrinda. It's Vrinda Devi's place. But she has given it to Radharani. But she controls, she runs the place. Right? All the birds, all the trees, all that. She organizes all that. All the facilities for Radha and Krishna's pastimes. She organizes all that. She organizes all that. You know? They need musical instruments, it's there. They need things, facility for swimming, it's there. They need flowers and garlands and all that, it's there. They need fruits, it's there. You need the various animals for different pastimes, she arranges it. So all the paraphernalia for their pastimes is arranged by Vrinda for Radha and Krishna. Right? So I mean, it's going to be very hard to perform the pastimes without some paraphernalia, isn't it? And that has to be gotten for Vrinda Devi. So how are we going to be able to get into the Lord's entourage, Lord's association, without her blessing? You know, how will that happen? You know, Hare Krishna. Is that understood? So from both aspects, from the platform of Vrindavan, or from platform of the Bhagavat Marg, that if we're going to worship Krishna, means worshiping Krishna with love, that means worshiping in relationship with Krishna, means pastimes, means in the pastimes there's interchange and there's facility. So without her mercy, how are you going to do that? Right? And in the platform of Pancharatra, then this Radha and Krishna are worshipped, but because we're doing according to rules and regulations, because we lack love, we have to follow the rules. Therefore, they are accepting that and reciprocating in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. And then here it's pointed out that Tulsi is more dear to the Lord than Lakshmi. Right? So on that platform, again, Tulsi is there. So you need her blessings to approach Narayan. Means you want to offer something, nothing you can offer has any meaning unless there's a Tulsi on it. You may have all the ornaments, this and that, that you like. That's nice. But Krishna prefers just even one Tulsi leaf. So if you can do the Tulsi leaf plus those, then you get, then the benefit is Tulsi leaf plus those. Right? Understand? That makes some sense? So one should not neglect the worship of Tulsi. So we can read that again here. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Tulsi tree, which can immediately vanquish volumes of sinful activities. Simply by seeing or touching this tree, one can become relieved from all distresses and diseases. Simply by offering obeisances to and pouring water on the Tulsi tree, one can become freed from the fear of being sent to the court of Yamaraj, the king of death who punishes the sinful. If someone sows the Tulsi tree somewhere, certainly becomes devoted to Lord Krishna. And when the Tulsi leaves are offered in devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna, there's the full development of love of Godhead. So that, you know, takes care of that aspect. So in Tulsi worship, in the morning after Mangalartik, and preferably in the evening, before Sandhyartik, all the assembled devotees should attend Tulsi worship and circumambulate Tulsi Devi. First, we offer obeisances to Tulsi Devi with the Tulsi Pranam mantra, chanted three times. Vrindayai Tulasi Deviyai Priyayai Kesavasucha. Krishna, oh, here it says, Krishna Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavatyai Namo Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Vrinda, Srimati Tulsi Devi, who is very dear to Lord Keshava. O goddess, you bestow devotional service to Krishna, and you possess the highest truth. Then we sing the Tulsi Puja Kirtan, while one devotee offers artik to Tulsi. Okay, this we all know. Okay. Then we circumambulate Tulsi, like that, and pour some water on Tulsi. While circumambulating, we're chanting Yani Kani Chapapani Brahmahatyadi Kani Cha Tani Tani Pranashyanti Prarakshina Pare Pare. When a person circumambulates Tulsi Devi, all the sins he may have committed are destroyed at every step, even the sin of killing a Brahmin. Okay, so here are some notes given by Krishna Kshetra on dealing with Tulsi Devi. That when you're carrying a potted plant of Tulsi, especially if you have to move through, I mean, even if you're not, but especially if you have to move through a crowd, then it's always best that you carry the Tulsi on your head. Because you keep her up, and then she doesn't get disturbed having to move people away and getting bumped and this and that. If the plant is too big, means the pot's too big, you can't carry on your head very easily, then you can carry it holding in the front. Then you must be very careful not to bump into others while you're carrying the plant. Then when you put where she should be for the worship, it's ideal she's up, at least kind of like, you know, the base is like at the waist of the devotee, so she's not too much lower than everybody else. That is important. She shouldn't be, we're standing and then she's on very, very low platform. She should be also up a bit. Like that. And those who are offering the artik, they should be dressed for doing service in the pujari room. Means they should be wearing very clean cloth, you know, properly dressed. In this way then, because it should be understood is that the same standard that would be there in worshipping the deity, that will also be there for worship of Tulsi. Okay. Then it is mentioned here, because many of these notes are also for a Western situation, that if it is best to have an actual Tulsi tree there, but if you don't have, then you can substitute with a picture. Sometimes you're in places where it's very difficult to grow or get Tulsi plants. And he also mentions that it's a tradition to honor Tulsi Devi by having a Tulsi plant on the table or next to the table where the Bhagavatam class is given. But that should be, the platform where Tulsi sits should be higher than the person sitting on the Bhagavatam. I mean, sitting for the Bhagavatam class means on the asana that they're sitting. Means her asana should be higher than the person sitting. And then you have the place for the Bhagavatam to sit. Okay. Okay, then it gets into details of the worship of Tulsi done by the pujaris with the remnants like that. This we'll get into later when we get into the deity worship itself. Once we understand all the different technical rules and regulations. Okay. Any questions on this? Yes.
When I was small, for many years, it was like you watch the Tulsi Devi, you put drops to her feet, and then you take some first from your head, and that's about it. But last 5 years, there's so many things, like putting two at her feet and one on the cloth, and then and touching her leaves, like that, and like many new things. These are all like
these are the various varieties. This is all what you call lokika. Means that according to the bhav, they will manifest like that. But otherwise, the normal thing is you go up to Tulsi and you offer 3 drops of water. You know, like that. Sometimes I've seen some, because it says by touching. But then, you know, they might just touch on the bottom leaves or just touch, you know, the base or touching the dirt like that out of respect. You know, the thing, both hands, this, that, and goody goody and, you know, rolling on the ground and all these kind of things. The thing to do is come and check if the devotee who comes and touches both sides of the Tulsi plant at once and then touches the head very affectionately ever does that when nobody's in the temple room. That is another aspect of religious principles. Is someone who is pious and religious always wants everybody else to appreciate how pious and how religious they are. That is part of the being religious, is that you want everybody else to know you are religious and everybody else should think well of you because you are religious. So one has to see that kind of attitude is not there. You know, so one has to be very, very careful, because one person may be able to do it properly and gently, but then if, you know, other guys start doing it, you're going to break a lot of branches, and, you know, and especially they're touching with both hands, you know, since when is the left hand so wonderful and clean and like that. So it's just their own idea. Like that.
But today you represent the whole body of Vrinda Devi, then putting the third drop on top of the light.
Well, it's like, why devotees like to put on the top, you know, I mean on the bottom and on the top. It's one thing is if you're watering a tulsi who's in the ground, and you're coming and pouring water, so you pour through the plant onto the ground. That's one thing. Or she's more low, and then you might pour in from the middle to the ground. But that's just where it's convenient to get it onto the ground. But the water that you drip, then she drinks that water through the root. So if you pour it onto the leaves and all that, that's okay if you're one of the pujaris who's giving her a bath. But otherwise, generally, one puts it on the ground. To water tulsi means to put on the ground. Like that. That's generally the thing. You know, and offering respect by touching the ground that she is in. So that the ground that she's in means the ground in the pot. It doesn't mean that you have to be within half a nanometer of the bark of the tree and then press there. It means you don't just touch it lightly, but you have to press to make sure you get the full potency coming, you know, into your finger. And then that you put on your head. So you can imagine if everybody presses on that spot, you know. You just very gently touch the dirt there and touch your head, you know. Yes?
Sometimes I say, if you drink water, so if you can drink through the roots, sometimes you come like to the lake or the temple and get to yogi and stuff. There's just one more fuzzy there, and it's just like...
flooded.
Swimming in water. So are you really giving her... I mean, you're more benefiting yourself by watering her.
Yeah, if you come and you find that she's already well watered, that the water is still sitting in the pot, then better not to put any more water. Because it says here that by offering obeisances and pouring water. So they're kind of going together. So you go, otherwise then if that's that case, then you just, you know, mention to her, since she has so much water, I won't be, you know, offering. Or within the mind you can offer like that, because that will also be accepted as service. But if she already has so much water, he points out here, because like in the West, the weather is cold, and they many times they'll keep them in the greenhouses. He says only water her in the morning, because unless she can absorb that much water, then shouldn't water twice a day like that. You know, once is enough. Otherwise, a bhajari should be, I say, rotating the tulsis, different tulsi in the morning, evening, like this, some way. So that has to be considered, is what will be the effect of too much water, because she doesn't appreciate too much water either. Ah, yes. So the question is it Vishnu Bhakti or Krishna Bhakti? So the original shloka is Vishnu Bhakti. I'm not sure where the Krishna Bhakti came from. I mean, I heard it back in, when was it, in the late... must have been somewhere late 70s or something. Then that came up. I'm not sure if they got it from the Gaudiya Math or some devotee just... thought, well, we don't want Vishnu Bhakti, we want Krishna Bhakti. And then it became popular. And then, you know, discussions have been going on since that time. Ah, what did he say?
So he mentioned about this. So in,
speak loudly.
He was saying that in the early days they very quickly started to use Krishna Bhakti. But in Prabhupada's original letter, when he gave this prayer to be said, it was Vishnu Bhakti, so he like continued saying Vishnu Bhakti, and he would always defend himself with his letter. And then he found out also in the Gaudiya Math, they either say Krishna Bhakti or Vishnu Bhakti.
It may have been from the Gaudiya Math that they got it, because otherwise it wouldn't have come from there. You know, otherwise, why did they say, you know, could have used any other name, you know? Point is it doesn't really matter, you know. But the original shloka is Vishnu Bhakti. Because the point is we know that Krishna is the original Vishnu. You know, we know who... Point is we know who we're worshipping. You know. like that. Yes.
Also in the temple here, it's like as soon as the time people start going around, it's like a crowd that pile on and grab all the flowers out.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting. It wasn't there, I don't remember it being there a year back or two. See, what happened is that when you have such big crowds, then what would happen is it used to be when the artik was finished, only would devotees come to water. But in these big crowded temple scenes, you know, I'm not sure if it started in other places, but like in Mayapur and all that, then when the artik would finish a little bit early and during the last stanza of the song, then they used to have, you know, sannyasis and other senior men come forward and water, you know, tulsi, so that then they would go and then the other devotees could. So when that somehow or another started up, then I would see that, then after that, then the other senior devotees would, you know, the next level of senior devotees would come forward. And then they would water, and others would just start going around, and when there was some emptiness, then they would come in. And now I see that, you know, it's just a free-for-all. There's no, there's no discrimination of caste, creed, color, age, you know, devotion, seniority, or anything. It's just that everybody acts on the lowest platform possible and rushes in like a bunch of, you know, 12-year-old madhouse kids. And, you know, just does whatever they like. So it's not so good. It doesn't look so nice. And so ourselves, we should avoid that totally. Means as Gurukul students, then when the circumambulation starts, at that time we should be going around. And then after a couple of times, or after we've gone three times, then we should go in and try to water. If not, if that doesn't work, we used to come back here and water here in the Gurukul, right? Like that. So we should avoid ourselves joining the, what do you call it? The scramble, or the scrum, yes. Like that, yes.
I've also seen some people do it before, you know, when people are paying obeisances to the Shingle, some people water them. Is that offensive today, even before that?
It's offensive to do before. If you have to go to other services or this or that, because many times you see like pujaris and that, they don't get to attend, so they might, or they'll come at some other time of the day. It should be that one doesn't have some other time, one does. It shouldn't be that one is trying to do quick so one doesn't have to take part. In other words, it's too long, the whole thing, so I just want to do something short. So that's not so good, because that means that, you know, we feel it's a burden, these things, and we reduce the importance of it. Means the atmosphere, or the richness of the atmosphere is created by the devotees involved. The devotees think it's a disturbance, then that whole, you know, niceness in the atmosphere will be reduced. If everybody takes part in that, who can take part, they do. But if need be, if one has to go somewhere, do some other service or this or that, then there's no harm. But you should just be very careful that is not, because others don't necessarily understand why we're doing things, right? So there's a tendency, they may think, well, they do it, I'll also do it. You know? They don't know that you're doing that and then you're about to go and, you know, wash the deity's plates or, you know, do something else. And so then it's not, you would be there if you could, but your service is such you can't. Like that, or you're leaving to going to Calcutta and so you wanted to water before going. Like that. So they just, all they see is, well, this devotee did and I can also do. Like that. So you always also have to be very careful of the creating the Hindu riot syndrome. Is that one Hindu does it, and then everybody else within that's within viewing range on a 360-degree radius, then wants to do that. And then anybody who outside that and then observes those persons doing it, then they must do it. Ain't that? It's a natural. It's a common phenomenon, huh? Yes, it's a very common. Any other questions on Tulsi? Yes. Where is this shloka from? It is from the Skanda Puran and it's quoted in the Nectar Devotion in chapter 11.
Skanda Puran.
Yes. Is it considered offensive to use tulsi leaves as medicine? Generally, whatever is there should be offered. Means it must be offered. So there are medicines that are prepared. Means in the Ayurvedic tradition, all medicines after being made are offered to the Lord. Therefore, they are prepared with the same purity and consciousness as you would prepare boga offerings for the Lord. Then after that, the medicine is offered to the Lord, and then one then takes those remnants. That is the proper Ayurvedic system. So then, because everything's being offered, then tulsi may be used in preparations like that. But it must be offered. Another thing, as I was also mentioned, is those leaves that fall off on their own, the ones that turn yellow. And those are the ones that are generally are used for the medicines.
Am I just yes. saying like prickly heat powder with tulsi, is that offensive to use?
Generally, something like that, soap, and prickly heat powder with tulsi, those things we would avoid. Because the medicines that we're talking about are generally medicines that would have tulsi in it, would be ones that would be eaten. You know, that's generally, one wouldn't put tulsi just anywhere. Because otherwise, prickly heat powder goes in all kinds of strange places, so it's like, so one would prefer to avoid using that tulsi. It's put in medicines in that way. You understand? Means tulsi is a very good, means if you have prasad, tulsi, like you have tulsi garlands and all that, tulsi taking with medicine, she's a very good carrier of medicines. Like that. In other words, the body very easily assimilates the medicine if it's taken with tulsi. Like that. But one will not make, generally one will not use in a cooked way offered tulsi. The tulsi that's been offered will just be taken as it is. But for preparations that have to be made, then those will be generally boga, then it's made and then that's offered. But you have to be very, very careful. I heard Prabhupada got upset that there are some devotees who took the tulsi garland and made tea out of it. And then we're sitting around and we're enjoying their hot cup of evening tea. And Prabhupada was saying it's not the proper mentality. In other words, they wanted to drink tea and they thought, well, it would be real nice if it's tulsi and it's prasad. So their point was drinking tea rather than, that it's some medicinal thing and the reverence for tulsi and the prasad and like that. You understand? So it's fine point. Generally, it's 3 or 4, like that. 3 is like generally the minimum, like that, that you go around 3 times, like that. And 4 is also a recommended amount. Because then four times is then you get the benefit, it's considered the equivalent of having, you know, gone around the whole universe. You go around three times, is that, I think it's just, I'm not exactly sure what that is. That's Bhur Bhuva Swa, I think. If you go the fourth, then it's the complete universe. But Bhur Bhuva Swa also basically includes that. Yes.
Marjan, go up in time, you can like barely get around once. What to do then?
Yeah, then that's, you know, that was, it's a very big once, but otherwise then you have, you know, either at a later time, you know, after the going, when everyone clears out, or do within the mind, the extra. Always the main thing is these kind of things where there's any shortcut, you have to make sure that it's not being done out of laziness. Right? Means you can't get around, so therefore within the mind you do it. If you could get, you would do it. You know? Like that. Okay. So we'll stop here. So the next today is what, Saturday?
Yeah.
So the next class will be then on Tuesday. Then we'll start with the Shastra Saver, service to the Shastra. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.